hoping less people would come so we'd fit now. Has everyone else dropped out? Has everyone else dropped out, or is there just a school that's
late? We're meeting soon. Meaning I'm going back to college soon.
Well, that's so sad. Okay.
No, it's the same. Isn't it the same people every week?
Yeah, just last week we had like.
This is all being recorded.
Okay, that's fine. All right, good. All right, everybody. Who has good notes? Can tell me where we left off.
Rabban.
Did we get to the Rambam and the Ravid? No. Okay. Fine.
How would the Rabban like? What's it called? It's like Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, like Yodea Talumo, like you know all these things about me, even if I didn't even, like, if he's like, you don't know anything that goes on in my brain.
That is an excellent, excellent question. That's why most people don't hold like him. I don't know. It's got to be a lot more internal and intellectual than we're used to thinking. You're right, it's very radical. Maybe we'll come back to him, Bezrat Hashem, sometime, even though we only have one semester. See how much we can come back to. Okay. So, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, I think we left off, we're asking about the stira, oh, here we are, great. The stira between divine foreknowledge and Bechira Chafshis. If Hashem knows everything we're going to do before we do it, then how do we have free will? So, two Shmizi answers. Rabbeinu Kreska says, we don't really have free will. We're just free to do what we want, but what we want is determined. The Ralbag says, Hashem doesn't really know what we're going to do. Okay, there may or may not be other makoros that imply that, but we'll skip that for now. I want to do the two other answers in the Rishonim. There's the answer of the Rambam and the answer of most Rishonim. The Rambam says a very funny answer. But if you understand this, then you understand the philosophy of the Rambam. If you look at Makar 2, the Rambam Halacha Dalid, the last paragraph on the first page, Shema Tomar. If you'll ask, Hashem knows everything that's going to be beforehand. Did he know if you would be a tzaddik or rasha, or did he not know? If he knew you'd be a tzaddik, then you have to be a tzaddik. Right? So you have no free will. If you say, well, he knew you'd be a tzaddik, but you could still be a rasha, then Hashem didn't know things properly, and Hashem is stupid, and that can't be. He says, the answer to this question is broader than the earth and wider than the sea. And many important principles of faith and great mountains depend on this. It's very complicated. You have to understand what I'm saying, says the Rambam. We already explained over there, Sodei Torah per base, Shekadosh Baruch Hu ein yodea mideh shehu chutz mi'anu k'nei adam shehim v'dayton shnayim. Hashem doesn't know with the knowledge that's different from him like people, who they and their knowledge are the same, right? Me and my knowledge are two different things. You can imagine me without my knowledge. Right? For example, let's say I know Bava Basra, right? But there could be me and my knowledge of Maseches Bava Basra, and those are two different things, right? I didn't used to know Maseches Bava Basra at one point in my life, and now I do. It's a new thing. But Elohu Yisrael Shmo V'Dai To Echa V'In Dai Shlom Yecholav. But Hashem and his knowledge are the same thing. They're not God and God's knowledge. God and God's knowledge are the same thing. What does that mean? We can't understand this properly. Just like we can't understand the true nature of God, it says, no one can see me and live, meaning a living human being, a physical creature, can't fully understand God. Since we don't understand God, we can't understand God's knowledge, because God's knowledge is God. That's what the Navi says. God's thoughts are not like our thoughts. Hashem's ways are not like our ways. Hashem is radically different. Therefore, we don't understand how Hashem knows all creatures and all their acts. One thing we know without any doubt. That our actions are up to us, if we will. Hashem doesn't pull you or decree to do anything in particular. Not only because it's a religious tradition, we know we have free will, there are good philosophical proofs. Good ending for it. That's why it's fair for Hashem to judge you and punish you or reward you if you do good or evil. And that's the basic principle underlying all of the Torah. So, what's the Rambam's answer? There's a stira between The fact that Hashem knows what you're going to do, and the fact that you have free will. How did the Rambam answer this Stira? Someone tell me back his answer that we just read. Explain to me what he just said. We can't really know. And we can't know God. So, is that a good answer? Is that a satisfying answer?
He's disqualifying the stira.
Exactly, he's disqualifying the stira. Now here, he's disqualifying the stira. Why does he get into this? If you look at number 9, skip to page 4, number 9, and we already did what's in between. The Ravid criticizes the Rambam. Says the Rambam is not a good teacher here. The Rambam's didactic strategy is improper. 9, the Ravid says, V'kevin shekeinu ein banukach leidehech yedar kadosh baruch hu kolabru maisi dehem. Amar Avram lo nodzeh mechaber minigah chachamim. The Rambam did not act in a wise fashion. She'ein adem maskel b'dover lo yedah lashlimo. You shouldn't start asking Akasha if you don't know how to answer it and you just say we don't understand. V'heichal b'shelos kushios. He started with tough questions. V'niach adem b'kushi and left it with the question. V'chzir lamun and says we just have faith and we know it works. Says, look, if the Rambam had asked a tough philosophical question and given a good philosophical answer, then v'seder. The Rambam asks a difficult philosophical question and just says, oh, we don't understand it. So, and just have faith. Just me, we know that Hashem knows everything. We know that we have free will. Right? This is also the Rambam's shot, by the way, in the Mishnah of Obos. Hakol Tzafoy, finish the Mishnah. Hakol Tzafoy. The Harashut Nitunah. The Rambam says that it means everything is foreseen. Hashem knows everything in advance, but Rashut Nitunah, your free will anyway. Why? That's our Masorah. So if the Rambam was just going to leave you to your Amunah, why get philosophical in the first place? Just don't bring up the question. You shouldn't ask people philosophical questions that bother them religiously and then say, oh, well, it somehow works out, just trust me. If they're just going to trust you, then don't be a philosopher. So he says, V'lashal achas yavuhir abalim alzeh. Maybe one time someone will have a theologically improper thought because of this. So, leaving the Ravid for now. The Ravid says the Rambam was wrong. He brought up this difficult question, and he gave a bad answer. He just says, well, we don't really understand how these things work. So, why did the Rambam bring up the question in the first place and like give you all these doubts and difficulties philosophically if he's not going to have an intelligent answer? So, why do you think the Rambam did this?
Maybe because like, despite all the muscle of the evil, there really is no answer.
Okay, maybe there really is no answer. That's definitely true. The Rambam says we don't actually understand it. But I think, who is it who said that he disqualified the question? What's your name? Oh, sorry. I think the Rambam is actually trying to teach us something that's very important if you are the Rambam. Because the Rambam says, as I explained, in the second paragraph of Hilchos Yisod HaTorah. What's Hilchos Yisod HaTorah about? The Yisodot of the Torah. What did the Rambam say in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah might mean about? It's about the basic Yisodos, which starts, what's the most basic Yisod?
Faith.
Right, the most basic Yisod is faith. Faith isn't a lot of things. We believe a million things. But is Hashem, right? Is monotheism. Right, what did the Rambam think about monotheism? Look at number 10. The Rambam says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makra mita yodeos ha-kamo shehi. Hashem knows his truth and knows it as it is. V'ein yodea b'deishu chutz v'menu kosha en yodim. Hashem doesn't know with a knowledge that's outside himself like we do. She'ein anav datinu echad. We and our knowledge are not one. Aval abor yisbarach hu v'daitim chayiv echad mikol tzad mikol pinim kol derech yichud. But Hashem yisbarach, he and his knowledge and his life and his everything are one in every way and in every angle and in every possible means of unity. Why? Why is this strange thing? Like me, there's me. Let's say I get angry. There's me and my anger. Let's say I learn trigonometry. There's me and my knowledge of trigonometry. Let's say, you know, whatever it is. There's like a lot of different things about me. But Hashem, no, there's not God and his knowledge. There's just God. And God and his knowledge are all one, which we don't totally understand what it means. Why is that so important? This was, you should know, in the Middle Ages, this was like the biggest debate among all the, you know, many of the Jewish and all the Arab philosophers. What does monotheism mean? Now, everyone agrees. All the philosophers then were monotheistic. Everyone means... believes me, like there's not like Zeus and Hermes and Apollo and all these like pagan gods. That's Pashtun or Baal and Ashtaroth or whatever you want to pick. But like, what if there are two parts of God? Is that called monotheism or not?
Yeah.
Right? So that depends on who you ask, right? If you ask the Mekubalim, then Lechor, that is monotheism, right? Because they say there are many different spheros in the Godhead without getting into the fact that it's complicated. Right? If you, I mean, you shouldn't do this, the Noda Yehuda says, but if you're Nisitzvard, if you're from Hasidic stock, before you do all the mitzvahs, say, L'shem Yichud Kodesh Baruch Hu U'Shchinte. Right? I'm doing this mitzvah for the sake of unifying HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the Shechina. Meaning, there's different aspects of God that my mitzvahs unify and bring together and otherwise are separate. So obviously the Mekubalim, that's why the real Maimonideans, there's a big fight in Yemen almost 100 years ago. I mean, big knockdown, drag out fight to the death in Yemen 100 years ago from those Chachamim who said Kabbalah is Kfira. And those Chachamim who say the people who don't believe in Kabbalah is Kfira. As to whether it counts as monotheism if there are different parts to God. For example, if God has a body, right? If Hashem has a body, why is the Rambam so sure God doesn't have a body? Because if Hashem has a body, then there's a right half and a left half. There are two parts of God. Is that monotheism? So some people say, yeah, there's one God, it's monotheism, even if there are different parts. And the Rambam, and many people said, no. Monotheism means there is one God, and he's indivisible. There are no parts of God. There's just the unity of God. You can't split God into two parts, because then there are two gods. And then it got a little more subtle. What if there's God and his knowledge? Does that mean there are two gods? Is that monotheism? So the Rambam writes, if God, there was God and God's life, or God and God's existence, or God and God's knowledge, or God and God's mercy, etc., there would be multiple gods. If you say there's God, there's God's existence, there's God's knowledge, then you already have three gods. You're already Christian. Right? And then you say there's God's mercy, and there's God's wisdom, and there's God. Then you have many, many gods. You end up being a total pantheist. The Rambam was very, very strict about monotheism. In a Dover Cain, Ela Echa be called Sodom, called Binah, called Derek Yichud. God is one in every possible way. Nim says, Ata Omer, Hu Yodev, Hu Yaduv, Hu Adea, Atzma, Kol Echa. Therefore, we see that God knows and is known and is the knowledge all at once. But Dover Zain Koch, Hello Omer, Globo, Ozan, Lashon, Globo, Leiv, Hadn, Lakir, Oguryo. And this thing we can't say or hear or understand, we don't know what it means. We don't understand what that means, but it's true. Thikach Omer, he is a fascinating diuk in Tanakh. It says Chei Paro and Chei Nafshecha, but it says Chai Hashem. Right? Chei Paro, the life of Paro. Right? Chei Nafshecha, the life of your soul. But it also says Chai Hashem. God, life. It doesn't say the life of God, because there are two different things. God is life, is existence, is knowledge, etc. The Rambam, this is the Rambam Shita. To us, it seems a little like picayune and abstract and like, why are people so concerned about this? But the Rambam was very concerned about this. The Rambam held, you were only a monotheist if you believed that God is a perfect unity and that there isn't God's anything. Because then there's two gods. There's God and his knowledge, or God and his mercy, or God and his wisdom, God and his existence. No, there's just God. Everything else is within the concept just God. What does that mean? Like, what does it mean? Like, Hashem knows everything that happens in the world, but that's not something besides himself. That is himself. Like, his essence is just perfect knowledge, and it's not like Hashem and his knowledge. We don't know what that means for someone's, like, essence to be knowledge, because we're familiar with physical things. That, like, you have a brain, it could be full of knowledge, or it could be empty of any particular part of knowledge. Like, we don't understand what it means. That, like, by definition, you are a certain knowledge or wisdom or v'chuli v'chuli. Okay, we don't know what it means, but nonetheless it's true of Hashem, because otherwise you are a polytheist. You believe more than one God. So for the Rambam, I think, like on the one hand, yes, the Rambam's asking this difficult question. Let's answer three. Is the Rambam. What does the Rambam say? The Rambam says that he gives what seems like a cheap answer, what seems like a misleading answer and an unsatisfying answer, the Rambam accuses him of. The Ravid says, you're asking a tough question. Hashem knows what you're going to do beforehand. How do you have free will? And what is your answer? Your answer is that God's knowledge doesn't mean the same as what we think knowledge means. Because when we think of knowledge, we think of something that a person possesses in addition to themselves, in addition to their essence, that they could have not had and then they get. God's knowledge is something totally different. It's part of the essential definition of Hashem. And we don't understand what that means. And therefore, here's the cheap part. Whenever you have a contradiction between two things, and one of them, you don't understand what it means, then automatically, it's not you've disqualified the contradiction. There can't be a contradiction between two things if you don't know what one of them means, by definition, right? There can never be a contradiction between the principle of free will and the principle of Gemeinschaft. because I haven't told you what that word means, so it can't possibly be a contradiction, right? So whatever it means, somehow it works out. The Rambam is giving a bit of a cheap answer when it comes to free will, but I think why is the Rambam bringing this in? Because he thinks it's important. That's why he keeps talking about how it's wider than the sea and many principles depend on it. He thinks it's important if you really want to be a monotheist. Like, to be a real Jew, you have to believe in one God. To believe in one God, you have to believe that Hashem is the ultimate unity, which means that Hashem doesn't have knowledge in the human sense of the word knowledge. I'm not going to go through all of them, of course, now, because we have a lot to do today. But in 11 and 12, there are passages from the Mor Nevuchim, where the Rambam goes through this, explains this doctrine that basically you can't say any human word about God, because once you use any human word to describe Hashem, then there's two gods. Right? Like, what can I say? Kel Racham, Hashem is merciful. Hashem has mercy. Then there's Hashem and Hashem's mercy, and there are two gods. Which you might have said, no, I can accept that. But for the Rambam, that wasn't monotheism. The Rambam was so strict that anytime God has a something, then there are two parts of God. There are two gods, and you're now a Christian or a pagan. And the Rambam took that very seriously. That underlies, maybe we'll get to it, a whole portion of the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam explaining how the goal of philosophy is not to, like, understand all the different words that apply to God. It's to understand how every human word doesn't apply to God, because God is beyond any human description. He brings many rayas from Chazal about this, right? The Chazal says, the famous Gemara, you're not really allowed to describe Hashem. The only reason we can say Gadol Gibor V'Nora is because we have a special heter from Moshe Rabbeinu and Anshei Knesset HaGadola, but it's not really true. Hashem's not really Gadol Gibor V'Nora, because if Hashem was Gadol, he would be great. There would be God and God's greatness. There would be two gods. Really, it's just the ultimate philosopher understands that God is beyond any human word. Therefore, I think the reason the Rambam gave this answer is not because it's the most satisfying answer to our skewer about free will, but because the Rambam thinks it's the truth and it teaches you to be a monotheist. Because if you actually think it's a stira, then you believe in two gods, God and God's knowledge. Once you believe that it's important to believe in one God, which means that God is his knowledge, which means God's knowledge is not the same as the human word knowledge. It's something inscrutable that we don't know what it means. Once we don't know what it means, that disqualifies the stira. That is the funny philosophical answer of the Rambam. But I think it's very important for the Rambam's philosophy, because he's basically saying, you know, I don't have a great answer to free will, but I do want to emphasize that it's important to believe in one God. And once you believe in one God, the question disappears.
How does he reconcile the fact that the Torah itself proves, the Torah itself says that Moshe saw Hashem's back, and the Torah itself reveals the Olamidos?
So some of these things are metaphorical. Basically, no, the Rambam knows that it's important to have, like, words we use to describe God. Now, the Rambam says either those words are used to describe God's actions, not God himself. Like, when it says Racham, it means God does actions which, if someone else had done them, would appear to be merciful. God does actions which seem merciful. But it's not that God has mercy, because anything God has, we can't understand. Right? Or sometimes it says God is merciful as a way of just telling us, this is very subtle. I mean, he has two answers. Either when it says Hashem is Racham, it means he does actions which seem like Racham in actions, but he's not actually Racham. Or it just means he's not Achzori, that he's not cruel. It doesn't actually mean he's merciful. It just means he's not cruel. And then if you ask, well, why not teach us he's cruel to mean he's not merciful? The Rambam would say it wanted to hint us that we should be Racham. So basically, Racham doesn't mean it literally. It's just a way of hinting us that we should be Racham. You all know the famous Hasidic Shabbat, no? Right? Who said yes? There's a famous question. It says in the Gemara that Hashem told Moshe Yud Gimel Midos and says, "Asa the funny seder azeh the heinanin. Do this seder Yud Gimel Midos and you'll be answered." The problem is, for thousands of years, Jews have davened with a lot of kavanah and slichos and Yom Kippur the Yud Gimel Midos, and sometimes Hashem hasn't answered us. But the Gemara says it's a verse that will always be answered if we do the Yud Gimel Midos. So the Chassidus Shabbat, I think it's a good Chassidus Shabbat, is Mar doesn't say say the Yud Gimel Midos. It says do the Yud Gimel Midos. Not enough to just daven and shout Hashem Hashem Racham Vachanun. We also have to do Racham Vachanun and Erech Apayim. If we do that in our lives, then Hashem will answer us. In history, when people said it but didn't implement it in their lives, that's why they weren't always answered. That's a famous Chassidus Shabbat, and it's a Chassidus Shabbat, but it's very strict Maimonidean philosophy. Because the Rambam would say, yeah, Racham Vachanun is basically hinting to us to be Racham Vachanun. So Hashem is really beyond that. And then he finds all kinds of excuses why we can use it for Hashem. This is a big vart all over the morning. Ayin Shalom.
What would Rambam say about like Hashem and his Shechina? Like, what is that?
The one thing that Rambam gets very upset is if you started these Kabbalistic ideas of like God and his Shechina and like, you know, like Humpty Dumpty, we have to put them back together again. if you read, Rav Yechiel Kafech was a big rabbi 100 years ago in Yemen who wrote like a 100-page-long sefer about how all the Kabbalim are kofrim al pi the Rambam because they believe there are different spheros in Hashem. And now, just to be fair, I'm not saying I agree with it, meaning all the chachamim in Yemen, it was a big machlokas, back and forth. You know, in Yemen, they were very loyal to the Rambam for hundreds of years. That was like the only posuk they ever followed. And all the Chachmei Yishalayim wrote a letter like excommunicating this Rav. Rav Yechiel Kafach, he was like an uncle or something of the famous Rav Kafach, who passed away recently, who was the leader of the big scholar in Talmud Chacham Vol that came out in Yerushalayim, who published like a lot of books, Masar of Kokol, the Rambams. But all the Chachmei Yishalayim excommunicated him. They said, no, you can't say this, and you can't say it. I mean, you can't go now and say that, you know, 90% of Jews for the last, you know, 1,000 years are all kofrim. But that's what he said, and you know what? The truth is, based on the Rambam, he's probably right. If you really hold 100% like the Rambam, yeah, all them kofrim are kofrim, for sure. What do they mean, God Shechina? In the few places that talk about God Shechina in the Torah, it doesn't mean another part of God. It means that Hashem will cause us to feel close to him or something. It means an action God does. V'shachat v'shachan doesn't mean there'll be a part of God in the Mishkan and a part of God somewhere else. And it doesn't mean God will be in the Mishkan. It means that in the Mishkan we'll have a spiritual experience. That's all it means. Or the Rambam, some might say Shechina might mean that like God communicates with us. God gives us a communication. But it's not part of God. Shechina is not part of God according to the Rambam. For sure not.
And so people who disagree with the Rambam would say therefore that Christianity is monotheistic.
No, they'd say Christianity actually has three different things.
But they all call the same.
Ah, so the answer is...
It's like a whole machloket.
It gets subtle, meaning everyone will look pretty much... the truth is that there is room in the postgame. There is a sheet that Christianity is not total Avodah Zarah. It's just not, like, proper for us. But I think a lot of people would say the Christian dies. The problem is that we don't understand the Christian doctrine. Do you ever know the official Catholic doctrine as to how... Like, there could be three parts of God, but he's really one.
Right.
The official Catholic doctrine is, it's a mystery that we don't understand. So it's very hard to, like, explain the halachos about someone else's mystery that we don't understand. But nonetheless, I think the mainstream halacha says, even if we hold, like, God has attributes or aspects, that's one God. The Christians say there are three gods, but also one, and it's a mystery. Mystery answers are not appropriate. Once you say there's three gods, you're an Ovid of Razar. Mainstream halacha, I know, a lot of people will want you to think otherwise. And make it sound liberal, etc. I'm all in favor of being liberal and being a nice guy, but nonetheless, mainstream 99% of love over the generations is that Christianity is Avodah Zarah, and that's just it. Or at least traditional Christianity. Nowadays, there's all kinds of, you know, sects of Christianity that maybe don't believe in the old-fashioned doctrines. But, yeah, but the way they always had Christianity, you know, the Catholics and the people who are close to that, is Avodah Zarah Gemurah. That's 99% data in the postcode. Okay, that's the Rambam. The Rambam basically says... The Rambam says, yes, it seems like a difficult question, but I'll answer it with another important shita of mine, and you have to hold that shita to be a good Jew, to be a monotheist. And once you hold that shita, the steer is disqualified. Great, that's three funny answers. Now, I'm not going to give the fourth answer. I want you guys to tell me the fourth answer. What is the simplest answer to this steer? If God knows what we're going to do in advance, how can we have free will? What's the simplest way to answer the steer? Right, let's review the steer. I may or may not finish this cup of coffee, right? Right now, Hashem knows whether or not I'll finish the cup of coffee. Let's say he knows I'll finish the cup of coffee. Then I have to finish the cup of coffee. And if he knows I won't finish it, then I have to pour some of it down the drain. Zehu. So, how do you answer the stira? Without any of these funny things. What's a common sense way to answer it?
You chose to do it. Well, you didn't know that it always was like God's will to do it, but you chose to do it because like you wanted to or whatever, and it just happened to be that it was God's will.
It happens to be, it's coincidence? Meaning, it's always coincidence and I choose to do the thing that God knows I'm going to do beforehand? You don't mean that.
No, not coincidence. I mean that you chose to do what you wanted to do, and that is God's will. Like, it was predetermined, and obviously you didn't know that, but...
But if it was predetermined, then I don't have free will.
I think we asked this last week also.
Okay, anyone?
But Kadosh Baruch Hu is omnipotent. He is past, present, and future. He's not deciding what they're going to do in the future. He just happens to know it because Kadosh Baruch Hu is an entity of all senses and purposes.
As Hashem breaks the normal rules of time, And therefore, oh, but he already knows I'm going to drink the coffee. How can I have free choice?
Because you have free choice. That's just what it is. Like,
but doesn't God already know I'm going to drink the coffee? Doesn't Hashem know? Right now.
No,
no,
it is
not.
Free choice is something that's in the mind. If in my mind, I don't know what God is thinking, so I have free choice.
No, but it's already determined.
But
no?
you don't know that.
But even though I don't know that, it could be a little better.
It's not that it's like determined. You just see like end of like the movie.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
I was trying to say.
God, now let's think about this, right? Let's say I, right? That's an interesting name. Let's say I watch a movie. All right, let's even say I watch a video, a security camera of a crime scene. There's a murder. I watch it on the security camera. Do I force the guy to do the murder just as I watch it on the camera?
No.
Actually, the guy who did the murder forces me to see it on the tape. I mean, if I decide to watch the tape. Now, of course, when can I watch the tape? Only after he does the murder. But what if I could watch the tape beforehand? Then, but it's just a videotape. Would I be making him do the murder? Or would he be making me see it on the tape? Assuming I like to watch the tapes anyway. So I'm going to watch whatever's on the tape. Basically, it's his murder that causes me to see it on the tape. It's not me seeing it on the tape that causes his murder. Now, that's impossible, because you can never watch the tape in advance. But let's look at the famous answer of, I think this will be the answer to the sheet. Let's skip to 14. To the, I mean, this is basically what the Ravid says in 9, this is basically what Tosfos Yonkav explains in 15, although he clings the Rambam means it, but I think that's underestimating the Rambam. Look at 14, the underlying part of the second paragraph. For Ula Yomer Od, Shu Yodea Mashi Yakod Meyoso, From Yeda Shadav Asad Amroso, V'yepsha Shloyam Reyo Adem Deish Teshul Yidigaso. Why is the Kasha of Hashem knew what you were in a vigor you can do beforehand, then you have to do it, because God's knowledge has to be true. So Gomos HaSavik is Zeyoser Be'er Min Yerisho, after the underlying part. This is easier to explain than our previous question. Husha Omro, Ein Lo Rayashi, Diasavor Sadvar Mesiyos Yoso. Hashem's knowledge doesn't cause that to happen. That's just something you thought or decided. Well, Bear has said that, and the reason for your mistake is, if Hashem's knowledge made you do it, then it would always have been done. Because Hashem always knew it. He never stopped knowing it. That line's not important. Let's think that Hashem knows things the way they really are. Whatever we do a chiddush, Hashem already knew we were doing a kaddish. Mashiyeshim mashiv korei adam, whatever a person chooses, kvar yeda shadim yikorei. You're right, he already knew what he would choose. In yomer kasher yeda bor shadam asal daver yitachas sheyachas sheyishto. The basic question: Hashem knew I would speak. Can I be silent? Hashem knew I would drink the coffee. Can I not? No more blushing sach. We can answer cleverly. Ki ha'adam ilu hayish sheyishto tmur sheydaver hayin mesirim beikar amaymar ki abor yeda shadam asal lishto. If I decided to be silent, then retroactively Hashem would always know that I plan to be silent. He only knows things retroactively based on what I do later. What's he saying? Let's say a guy commits murder. Hashem always knew he would commit murder. But what if the guy had decided to do tshuva not to commit murder? Then Hashem would always know that he didn't commit murder. Meaning, it's not that Hashem knows something and therefore that makes us do it. We make our choices, and therefore that goes backwards retroactively and makes Hashem know it. Now, usually we're used to thinking that the future can't cause things to happen in the past. But since God is beyond time, he says very poshut. God just gets to watch the movie before it happens. I know that's against our normal rules of physics. But Hashem watches the movie before it happens. But when you watch the movie, that doesn't make the guy do it. When the guy does it, that makes it happen in the movie. So basically saying that Hashem knows I'll drink the coffee. What if I decide not to drink the coffee? Then Hashem will have known that I wouldn't drink the coffee. What if I change my mind and decide to drink the coffee? Then Hashem will have known all along that I'll drink the coffee. Whatever I decide to do now goes back to the beginning of time and makes Hashem know that. So it's just that my choice now causes backwards causation. Backwards causation is against all rules of physics. Nothing I do tomorrow could cause anything to happen yesterday, right? Against every rule of physics. But not against the rules of Hashem. When I do it tomorrow, that makes it on the video that Hashem watched yesterday. And the watching the video doesn't cause anything to happen. Watching the video, Hashem's knowledge doesn't cause me to do something. My doing it causes Hashem to know it. Hashem only knows it based on my free choice. And it's actually very pushy. As long as you're willing to go backwards in time, when I choose, let's say I choose to do an avera, I choose to eat a cheeseburger. When I choose to eat a cheeseburger, then that makes Hashem know all along that I'll eat the cheeseburger. And if I change my mind and don't eat the cheeseburger, then Hashem all along knew I wouldn't eat the cheeseburger. So I'm not trapped or forced by Hashem's knowledge, because it's up to me what Hashem knows. I make Hashem. I determine Hashem's knowledge. Hashem's knowledge doesn't determine my actions. That is the answer of the Rav Sadia Gaon and probably most Mefarshim. Most Mefarshim give, it actually is a very clever answer if you think about it, is that right now Hashem knows I'll drink the coffee, but that's only because he already saw that I'm going to drink the coffee later. But he didn't interfere with my free choice. My free choice interfered with his knowledge. Yeah, the Rambam would love this, because the Rambam wouldn't like thinking that you can make Hashem do anything. But if we're willing to swallow that, it's actually very positive if you think about it. My choice tomorrow makes Hashem see it on the videotape yesterday, but it was still my choice that, you know, the chicken and the egg. My choice started the ball rolling. Hashem's knowledge only came, not literally after, Hashem knew it a million years before my choice. But conceptually, Hashem only knew it after I already chose to do it. Therefore, Hashem didn't make me do it, I made Hashem know. Oh, happened something I do tomorrow, make Hashem know something a million years ago. You can't make something happen in the past. With Hashem, you can, because Hashem is beyond time. That is what the Rav Sadia Gaon says. That is what the Ravid says. Watch. Hashem just watches the movie in advance. And we can all imagine this. Obviously, you can't watch movies in advance. Human beings can't watch movies in advance. But if I had some special magic machine where I could watch the security camera on this on Gruss, I could watch the Gruss security camera in advance, and I saw that tomorrow, you know, someone stole 100 shekels from someone's wallet, I didn't take away their free choice. I didn't make them steal. They made it appear in the video. They made me see it. I didn't make them do it. I didn't cause them. They caused me. They were free. And my viewing is a result of their choice. And that's exactly what Hashem is. He just sees the video in advance. That is the Sadia Gaon. That is the Ravid. The Ravid says, like astrologers who can watch the video in advance. Okay, that gets a little tricky because astrology is complicated. But those are the four answers to the Stira. Just the Chazar for a second. Four answers to the Stira. One is Ralbag. Hashem doesn't know what we're going to do. No Stira. Two is the Beit Kreskes. We don't really have free will. Mm-hmm. We just have free will within our minds, but our minds are caused by other things. No Stira. Three is the Rambam. Hashem's knowledge is not what the human word knowledge means. It's something which there's no word to describe. Therefore, automatically no Stira. And four is Rav Sadia Gaon, and probably most Mefarshim. Right, we don't have time to go into why other people didn't like this answer, but it's a very clever answer. Hashem watches the movie in advance, but you still have free choice, because you get to decide what's on the movie. The fact that Hashem saw it in advance doesn't take away the fact that you decide what's on the movie. It sounds funny to us, because usually we can't decide what's on a movie that's already been viewed. But with Hashem, we can. Those are the four answers to this theorem. Okay. If there's no questions, I want to go on to something a little more lemaisedic, which is, here, someone could just pass down these makorot. Chelek Beis. Oh, let me keep on top. Oh, here we go. Chelek Beis, we're going to have to run through it, but is a very, very important question. We had two arguments against free will. One is that Hashem knows we're going to do in advance. They were fancy, schmancy, philosophical arguments. One is Hashem knows what we can do in advance, so we don't have free will. Two is Hashem controls the world, so we don't have free will. Give me a non-philosophical argument against free will. If you asked some scientist, let's say a non-philosopher, just a scientist nowadays, let's say a very liberal politician maybe, what would they say? Do we have free will? Right? What would a scientist say? Let's say these liberals, what do the liberals say? Let's say a kid, you know, grows up disadvantaged in the ghetto and has a bad education and doesn't have a father and has abuse at home and then, you know, becomes a criminal. What would the liberals say? Not what? It's not his fault. Why? What made him do it? He's a product of his environment, like Ravina Kreska says. What about the taina that you're a product of your environment? Now, can you deny that you're affected by your environment?
No.
No. Now, what does it mean to have free will? Free will means This thing, free will means we are not determined by our environment. You still have free choice. But let me ask you a common sense question. Does everyone have equal free choice?
No.
Like, does, let's take an example. Let's take Shabbos. Does someone who was brought up non-from and someone who was brought up from have exactly the same kind of free choice to keep Shabbos? Right, let's say we believe, we'll believe in free choice. Everyone has free choice. But there's still, like, easier and harder free choice, right? There's still, everyone has free choice. But it's clear that you're affected by your environment. I think it's also clear that you're affected by your genetic makeup. You know, what if you have some sort of imbalance and too much dopamine or too little or whatever it is in your brain? Then that's going to affect your free choice. Right? It's clear that even if you believe in free choice, there are factors that make it harder or easier to choose certain things. And the champion of free choice is the Rambam, and the Rambam admits that. The Rambam fully admits that free choice doesn't mean that there are no factors that affect your choice. If you look at, for example, 16, he says, in the Shmona Prakim is about the nature of the human brain, or midos, or soul, says in the 8th parak, Teva Noshi, he says, lo yitach she'yad in the Teva mitchilus b'yaso ba'al ma'alav lo ba'al kusara. A baby who's born can't have a vice or a virtue. Just like a person can't have a trade when they're born. A baby can be born, and in their nature, in their brain, we all know, kids are born with different personalities. I have a lot of kids. I try to raise them more or less the same, but they're each born with a different personality, and they're each different. And you could be born with a predilection, right, that you are more oriented towards a certain vice or virtue. Like, a kid can't be born maybe, like, stingy or generous, but can be born with a brain that's more likely to be stingy or generous or angry or calm or, you know, studious or distracted, etc. These are things in your brain. A baby can be born, and the way his brain works is that it's easier to make one choice than the other. Mushal zeh, and then he gives a bunch of mushal, we get the basic point. The Rambam admits that he says clearly in the next paragraph, you're not forced to make any choices, but the odds can be with you or against you. Some people are born and, you know, let's say, you know, learning Torah. Some people are born, like, very intellectual and studious and able to sit and learn, and some people are born ADD. And then in Shmona Prakim Perek Daled, Buffer 17, he says, Da, ki elo ma'os v'apchisios shel midos, the virtues and vices of midos, amlam yiknuvis yashu b'nefesh, v'chazor la pulos ha'halos v'izu amida pa'amim rabos v'zan orah. This is a famous sheet of the Rambam, that how do you improve or ruin your character? How do you get vices or virtues? If you do actions again and again over a long period of time, you train yourself to be good or bad. This ragam lo lein, you get used to them. If you do a lot of good things, you get a virtue. If you do a lot of bad things, you acquire a vicious character. Since when you're born, you don't have any vices or virtues, most of the bar perek shmini, like we'll explain, we had it above. But when you're little, you get used to doing certain things. What determines what you're used to doing when you're little? Your upbringing. Be minakroba, like your family, your vanchiv, and also your neighbors. Actually, also pulos mutzos. Actually, your mutzos and mechaskos. Kamos shiparna v'yesha zek far chalsa nasho. Right? Maybe you'll be brought up with the golden mean, with the proper midos. Maybe you'll be brought up too much excessive in one way, excessive in the other way. And basically, maybe you can be brought up as a baby with a bad upbringing and already have a disease in your soul and already have bad midos. Right? So the Rambam fully admits that what you do, even though you have free choice. He fully admits that free choice means fundamentally you can choose, but it's easier for you to choose things based on how you were brought up and based on just your genetic makeup, how you were born, what we call nature and nurture. So if the Rambam admits, here's the question which not so much the philosophers, but the Bali Musar dealt with. The Bali Musar are challenged by this aspect. Philosophically, we all believe in free will, right? Except for Chasdei Kreskes and the Meshiloach and maybe the Chovas HaLevavos. Philosophically, we believe in free will. But we know that it's not 50-50. We know there are factors that make it easier or harder. We know that some people it's easier for them to be good because of the way they were born and brought up, right? Some people are born with, like, tzaddik genes and brought up in Sarai. Ari Levine had kids and they had all of the tzidkus genes from him and his wife and they were brought up in an atmosphere of great tzidkus. So, of course, it's going to be easier for them to be a tzaddik. And some people were born to a bunch of gangsters and murderers, and they got all these evil genes, and then they, you know, they were brought up with all these bad values, so of course it's going to be easier for them to be evil. So, how does Bechira Chafshis work? Where's your Bechira Chafshis if people are brought up different ways and everyone's not on a level playing field? Like, how do you get rewarded and punished? How is it fair to take into account your Bechira Chafshis if life isn't fair and some people are born with more advantages than others? I mean, in all of our lives, we know, just take, you know, being religious, right? Obviously, if you're brought up religious, statistics tell us if you're brought up religious, you're much more likely to be a good Jew than if you're brought up secular. So, how is that fair?
Well, each person is judged in a vacuum. Meaning, if I'm brought up to be religious, and it's very, very hard for me to keep even three halachos properly, because Baruch Hu judges me with how hard I work for those three, and my schar and onesh is...
So what you're saying is that judgment depends on where you're coming from. Meaning Hashem judges you in accordance with where your free will is holding. Right? What?
It's all on an individual.
It's all on individual level. Someone want to bring me Uriah from Pirkei Avos? Everyone should know Pirkei Avos. Right? You should learn before you learn the Seal Sushari and Shari Chuvan, Ali Shor. You should all learn Pirkei Avos. I mean that's you know, Chazal's Musar book. What did it say in Pirkei Avos? Anyone?
Start off with the first word.
Lefum?
Tzara Agra.
Okay, right? Maybe that's Lefum Tzara Agra. Now, there are actually three ways of conceptualizing this. One I haven't found so much in the postgame, but well, I thought the simplest way is to say we all have free will, but sometimes free will is harder and easier, and Hashem gives us more reward for things that are harder and less for things that are easier, and more punishment for, you know, things that, you know, are harder to do aveiros, and more less punishment for easier aveiros. But Michtam Eliyahu, Rav Eliyahu Dessler, says a radical idea. Based on this idea, he comes out with a tremendous kiddush. Maybe some of us have heard of this kiddush. We don't realize it's considered very radical in Jewish philosophy. Of course, since Rav Dessler said it, it's now not radical anymore, because Rav Dessler sort of like Tor Misinai was manazeh, just because he was, you know, in the, let's call it the Haredi world, in the Yeshivish world at least, Rav Dessler is considered Tor Misinai Jewish philosopher in Jewish philosophy, just because he was clearly the greatest, like, Haredi Jewish philosopher, and maybe one of the greatest Jewish philosophers of the last couple hundred years. So, I mean, deservedly so, he's considered Tor Misinai. But, Rav Dessler, anyone ever heard of this word of Rav Dessler? He says, Nekudat HaBechira. Right? Number 18, I'll say it over outside because some of us have heard it. He is very inspired, by the way. This muscle wouldn't work anymore. Warfare doesn't work this way anymore at all. Like, wars are totally different. But that's not important because it's just a muscle, right? Pretend we lived in World War I. Back in the old days. Nowadays, what does warfare mean? I just, like, nuke someone. But in the old days, how did wars work? Remember, like, you ever read or watch movies? Civil War, World War I, how did wars work? There was my army and your army. And what do we call where my hands are? The front. And what do we call the land in between?
No man's land,
correct? That's no man's land, right? No one's conquered it. And you, like, shoot across no man's land and try to, like, what does each side try to do? Again, they don't do this anymore nowadays. You try to advance and drive back the other army and conquer more territory, right? If France and Germany are at war, right? I think they actually were in his days. Now, what does each one try to do? Germany tries to conquer more and more territory until they can conquer all of France and push their army back. France tries to conquer more and more territory until they conquer all of Germany. And when you conquer all of your enemy's country, you win. Life was very simple back then. That is the way wars work back then, and it's a good mashal, even though, again, we don't really... If you play Risk, it's still worse that way. No one plays Risk anymore. I think they play something called Settlers or something instead.
Yeah.
Right? But anyway, in the old days, they made it work the same way. So, Rav Dessler has an amazing fish. What does Rav Dessler say? He says that life... This is all the Balibus are saying. Right? Life is a war between... Your exactly. Yetzer Tov. Yes, Yetzer Hatov and Yetzer Hara. Right? He says basically, what is life? Life is a battle. He says you're right. Basically, Bechir Chafshis seems to be partial, not total. Bechir Chafshis seems to be partial. What does Rav Dessler say? Rav Dessler says you're right. Bechir Chafshis is partial. How does that work? We all have a World War I going on inside our heads. Our Yetzer HaTov is trying to conquer more and more territory and make us more and more mitzvahs, make us more and more good people. The Yetzer Hara is trying to conquer territory and make us worse and worse. What happens? At any moment right now, let's say you're brought up. You're brought up in a certain way where the Yetzer Hara owns certain territory. You know, like I sort of brought, you know, we're all, let's take an obvious example, right? When we were brought up at the time when we were like little kids and we were taught by our parents, many of us, etc., the Yetzer Hara had certain territory conquered. Like, when I was a kid, and I was brought up with my parents, like, I always wore a yarmulke, and I always wore my tzitzis, and I always put my tefillin on every morning. And that was, like, conquered territory of the Yetzer Hara. Why? Because I was trained to do that by my parents, and my brain was receptive to it the way I was born. You know, I wasn't a very rebellious kind of brain that had trouble getting along socially. So, and you know what? Some things I do, I don't even have to choose to do. Rav Dessler says this is what's radical. 90% of what we do is not b'chira chafshis. Says, when I get up in the morning and put on tefillin, that's not b'chira chafshis, because I've done it for so many years. I'm trained to do it. I'm used to it.
Isn't
like,
that bad?
What?
Isn't that bad?
I don't know. We'll see in a second. It would just be too weird to me to get up in the morning and like not daven and put on tefillin. It would just feel funny. It's not like I'm choosing to do the right thing. That's just what I'm used to. You know, why don't I, you know, like, a better example. Right now, I picked someone in this room and I said, you know what? Could you just, like, you have a roommate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
you don't. You don't. Okay. Maybe that's part of the divine plan. Okay. Amanda. Okay. Amanda. You have a roommate? Okay, great. You know what? Could you torture her to death? I'll give you $100.
Like, physically?
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you $100. What's the point? Like, you really, really can't. Like, even if I offered you $1,000, you couldn't. It's just like, what's the point? The point is, it's just like, it's not in my personality. There are some avers I just can't do. It's just not in me. Right? That's called conquered territory of the Yetzer HaTov. Right? It's not free will. It's that there are some things, you know what? If you actually gave me a hamburger, like, and I tried to eat it, I would probably, like, pick it up and try to eat it, and then I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
You were kidding?
You know? What? No, sorry, cheeseburger. Oh. Sorry. Okay, take it back. You gave me a slice of bacon. I take the bacon, I say, you know what, I'm going to prove my free will. I'm going to eat the bacon. I would take it up, and I wouldn't be able to put it in my mouth. It would just be so weird and so against my lifestyle that I don't even have free choice. That's kind of the territory of the Yetzer HaTov. Like, I'm not going to go around murdering people. I'm not going to go around doing a lot of things. That's just what I've trained myself in my life. And you know what? Most of it, maybe it's not my credit. Maybe my parents brought me up that way. And then there's conquered territory of the Yetzer Hara. He says there are lots of yeshiva bachim, he was mashgiach in yeshiva, who would never, like, get up in the morning and not read tzitzis. But they would also never get up in the morning and, like, not talk lashon hara. That's conquered territory of the Yetzer Hara. They don't even really think about it. They don't, like, think, oh, should I talk lashon hara or not? You know what? I'm giving into my taiva. No, it's just their hair gel. Their lifestyle is to talk lashon hara. Everyone has these things. Everyone has our madrega. There are certain things. You know, there are certain people great. You know, in the summer, I saw some Jews who were brought up very traditionally in their way, and there are certain avers they would never, ever, ever do. You know, they would never, like, eat pork, and they would never intermarry, and they would never, you know, insult the chacham, and etc. But, like, you know, not talking on the cell phone on Shabbos is just not something to even think about. Of course you talk on the cell phone on Shabbos. That's just how we were brought up. There are certain things we always do right, and we would never change them because just we're used to doing them right. And certain things we always do wrong, and we wouldn't change them because we're used to doing things wrong. Where do we have Bechira Chafshis, according to Rav Dessler? According to Rav Dessler, our Bechira Chafshis is in no man's land. Everyone can think to themselves, there are certain things you know you're going to do right. Certain things, like right now where you're holding, you might know you're going to do wrong. But there are a lot of things that you, like, struggle with. Like, I don't know how many, like, a lot of yeshiva guys, like, would never skip davening in the morning. But whether they'll daven with kavanah or not, that's no man's land. Like, sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends if they feel like really being mitchazek and doing it right, or if they feel lazy. You know, that's like no man's land. You know, we all have, everyone has their no man's land. You know, some people are like, they of course, the way they're brought up, they would never keep Shabbos or eat kosher. You know, but their no man's land is like intermarriage. They're not sure if they would intermarry or not. Everyone has their own no man's land. It all depends how you were brought up, right? And some people were brought up that their no man's land is like, you know, to never be about the limit of Torah, but everything else, of course, they were brought up to do right. Everyone's brought up differently. Everyone has their no man's land. And Bechira Chashis, this is the radical idea of Rav Dessler, Bechira Chashis is only in the no man's land. However, that sounds very radical. Only, you know, only like, he didn't say what percent, let's call it 5%. Only 5% of our lives is Bechira Chashis? Right? Is that really true? Like, think of the war metaphor. France and Germany. They're only fighting over the no man's land. But are they only fighting over the no man's land? What's really going on? Is it true they're only fighting over this strip of territory?
No, they're not.
They are right now, they're only, in actuality, they're only fighting over this strip of territory. But what's the goal of France?
The others.
To push the strip back and back and back and conquer more and more and more and win all the territory.
Okay, it's hard.
What's the goal of Germany? To win all the territory. But if that's what said, yes, right now, today, you only have a Bechir Chafshis in this narrow strip. In actuality, right, the philosophers like to use the words actual and potential. In actuality, right now, you only have a Bechir Chafshis in this narrow no man's land. But potentially, you have a Bechir Chafshis over everything. Why? Because if you just make one bad choice now, you know, you all know there are people who would never dream, right? I could show you guys like this. They would never dream of intermarrying. Right? They're in yeshiva learning shtark. But right now, what's their bechira chashis? You know, whether to like get up for minyan in the morning or daven in their room. But you know what can happen? Right now, that's their only bechira chashis, to get up for minyan in the morning or daven in their room. I mean, in parallel things. But you know what? First they'll decide to daven in their room, they'll get used to that. Then they'll decide to daven like really, really quickly in 2 minutes, get used to that. Then they'll decide to not daven and get used to that. And then they'll decide to like hang out with non-Trump kids and they'll get used to that. And then they'll decide to go to the parties on Friday night and get used to that. And then they'll decide to not keep Shabbos and get used to that. And then they'll decide to eat trade and get used to that. And then eventually they'll marry a very wonderful Chinese girl. That happens, meaning it's really true. People change totally in life, but they change gradually, right? You gradually lose territory or gain territory. There could be kids who are brought up totally not from, and one day decided, you know what? I'm going to drive to shul every Shabbos. And then they decide, okay, you know what? I'm going to walk to shul. And then they decide, et cetera, et cetera. And in the end, you know, they're big tzaddikim. So what Dessler says is that every day, our bechira chashis is limited. It's only this one little strip. But in potential, over the long run, our bechira chashis is everywhere. And that's why, like, let's say you have a guy. You have a girl, right, who always, right, she always says brachas when she eats. She couldn't bring herself to eat without a bracha. It would just be too weird. She's too used to it for many, many years. That's not bechira chashis now. That's already conquered territory of the Yetzer HaTov. But you know what, maybe she was brought up like, and her parents never taught her to say brachos, and they're like, oh, that's not so important, like, just keep the more important things. And she decided once, when she was 14, you know, that she's going to start, like, saying brachos, and she said them a little, and said them more, and eventually got used to it. So is this free choice? Right now, it's not bechira chashis. But over the long run, everything is bechira chashis, because it's your choice that moves the front all the way to one way, or all the way to the other way, or a little, or not at all. So Rav Dessler says, it's actually very clever. Since Bechira Chashis is on everything in the long run, in potential. But in the short run, actually right now, Bechira Chashis is only in a small part of life. That's how he solves, like, in a Musser sense, in a real life sense. Like, how can it be that I know I'm used to certain things, yet I believe there's Bechira Chashis in everything? But Dessler says, no problem. Right now, most of what I do is Hergel, is a pattern in my life. And I only have Bechira Chashis over my, what does he call this? Nikudat habechira. That's the front. That's the nomad land. But in the long run, I have bechira chashis over everything. So he says, what does Hashem reward and punish you? Hashem rewards and punishes you only for your nikudat habechira. It's not fair to reward and punish you for other things, right? It's not fair for Hashem to, like, you know, reward and punish people for what they do if they were brought up differently. Hashem rewards and punishes you for your nikudat habechira. But if you move that nikudat habechira, let's say right now you always make brachos because you're used to it, and you don't even have to struggle and think about it. You just do it all. You're used to it automatically. I don't mean automatically without kavanah. Automatically with kavanah. Then do you deserve a reward for that? Well, if you're the one who moved your nekudat bechira there, then even though right now it's not bechira, it's not the nekudat anymore. Right now it's conquered territory. You're the one who conquered it 3 years ago. So of course you deserve credit. So he says, he brings many rise to the second of Chazal. Yeah, if a guy always does good things because he himself worked to move the line and conquer that territory, then even though it's not Bechir Chavshis anymore, you get credit as if it was Bechir Chavshis, because you're the one who chose to win that territory 3 years ago. And if you always do Averos, and right now, like right now, you don't think twice. It's totally not Bechir Chavshis. You're too used to it. But if you're the one who chose to move into Kudat Bechir out there, then you get punished. So, for example, someone brought a totally not from might not be punished for not davening every morning, because that wasn't in the Kudat Bechir. That wasn't how they were brought up. But someone who was brought up from and gradually moved the front until they stopped davening would be held responsible for it. Even though right now it's not Bechir Chavshis anymore, right now they've been non-from for 20 years. They're too used to it. It's not Bechir Chavshis, but they originally got there through the Bechir Chavshis. It's a little radical, because it says, every moment Hashem only judged you for your Kedat HaBechirah, everything else is determined. Your Bechir Chavshis today is very limited. But on the other hand, over the long run, your Bechir Chavshis is infinite. Everything depends on Bechir Chavshis, because you can gradually change. And therefore, it makes sense that Hashem judges you based on where your Nekudat HaBechirah started when you were Bat Mitzvah, let's say, when you were brought up. But where you move it through your own free will is your own fault. That is, you can read it inside at home, that is the essence of Rav Dessler.
I feel like this is very, intertwined with what Dr. Meskis, who said that, controls your experiences, because it's the same thing, though,
it's halfway Rav Kreskes, because he says, over here and here, it's determined by your experiences. But there's a little space in the middle. That's what's brilliant about Rav Dessler. He says, we know in life that people are affected by their experiences, so why isn't Rav Kreskes right? The answer is he's right 90% of the time. He's right about this and this. He's only wrong about this little strip in the middle. Doesn't that mean Bechir Chavshis is only a little? So that's what's brilliant about Rav Dessler. Yeah, today your Bechir Chavshis is only this little bit. But in the long run, you could push it all the way one way or the other way. So in the long run, your Bechir Chavshis is everything. And that's really true. How come two people are brought up the same way, and one of them goes all the way one way, one goes all the way the other way? You could throw in some good or bad experiences in childhood, but even so, we know one girl could go all the way one way, one all the way the other way. That's Bechir Chavshis. We see that Bechir Chavshis is only a little slice of life. Today it's only a little slice of life, but then I move it, you could grow, go up the ladder religiously, slowly, slowly, or go down slowly. That's what's brilliant about this Rav Dessler. Again, it's a little radical, because he says right now, 90% of what you do is not Bechir Chavshis, but that sort of fits our understanding of reality. And the chaf is that, even though right now, very little of what you do is Bechir Chavshis, in the long run, everything's Bechir Chavshis, because you can choose to conquer more and more territory for the Yetzer Hara, and by then, you're doing it automatically. But you use your Bechir Chavshis to get there. And he says, if this is the way you were born, then if, let's say by the time you're 20, right, if by the time you're 20, your Nekudat Bechira is here, then you get rewarded and punished for all this, for your Nekudat Bechira today, and for where you moved your Nekudat Bechira in the past 10 years. So that's how Rav Dessler works it out. In which case, so what does that mean for practical life? What that means is that, like, the little struggles that we have every day are so important, because it's not just the little struggles are really important. Like, a lot of people say, you know what? Like, I already do so many mitzvahs, like, I'm the Seder, fine. He says, no, those are already conquered territory. The struggle is in this no man's land. That's what you're rewarded and punished for. And not only that, the little struggles are so important, because if you make the wrong decision here long enough, the front will move. And then you'll always do those things wrong and be punished forever. And if you make the right decision on those little things, the front will move this way, and you'll always do those things right and get rewarded forever, and you'll be able to move on to the next step. So basically, it's the little things in between what we're struggling with that determine the future of our lives, which direction the front is moving. That's Rav Dessler. I just want to contrast that one of the interesting nafkaminas, which we won't get into now, is that for Rav Dessler, what's the ideal? Right, I don't know if you'll reach it. What's the ideal in life? To fully conquer everything and then never use Bechira again. Not that we're ever going to get there, but it's just interesting. Like, the ideal in life, he writes, is to, like, use your Bechira to not have Bechira anymore. the Rav, Rav Soloveitchik, over here in Alachuva, and also in a little more in Kol Dvar Yofei, has a slightly different way of dealing with the conflict between the fact that we all feel that we're shaped by nature and nurture versus the fact that we have free will. Then what Rav Dessler said is, yeah, most of it is nature and nurture, a little bit is free will, but over the long run, everything is free will. Which really matches it. You see people throughout their lives, you see people totally like moving to different places slowly. Rav Dessler has a very, Rav Soloveitchik has a very different way of looking at this. Anyone ever learn like Kol Dvar Yofei or Ala Tshuva? What are the two types of existence according to the Rav? Fate and destiny. Great, right? That's the English title of Kol Dvar Yofei, maybe?
Yeah.
What is fate and what is destiny? Right, what's the difference between fate and destiny according to the Rav?
Fate is the cards you're given, destiny is what you make of
them. Fate is, right, object-subject. Fate is living life as an object. Fate is like fate, like, you know, the Greeks said, blind fate, like that's just what's happening to you, you're just, you know, affected by these forces which are beyond you. The Rav says fate means non-bechirchas. Fate means nature and nurture. Fate means going in the way, he reads it into the Rambam, but that's not as convincing. Fate means going in the way that nature sends you. That's fate. What is destiny? Destiny means, right, this sounds existentialist if we're familiar with some philosophical terms. Destiny means bechir chafshis. What's he saying in Kol Dvar Yofei? What's Kol Dvar Yofei about? It's about the Holocaust and Zionism. Right, what did the Rav say in Kol Dvar Yofei? That we could be, right, what he calls the goral, fate, right, goral, etc. We could just be creatures of fate. Yeah, the Holocaust schmeißt us and this and that, and we're just objects and let the world run our lives. Or we could stand up and choose to realize our destiny, to make a free choice to do something. And basically what he was saying is, you could sort of wallow in the pity, self-pity of the Holocaust and have all these sit there and cry all day over how could God do this for us and other unanswerable questions. Or you could get up and actually do something in history and make something of it and support the state of Israel. And he was trying to inspire people to be to support the state of Israel, to be better Zionists. It's a beautiful essay. Everyone should read it. But he says the same thing in Ala Tshuva. He says, and Ala Tshuva, very important, he says, what is Tshuva all about? Or at least one aspect of Tshuva. He says there are two kinds of Tshuva. There's like Tshuva like, oh, within the way of the world, you know, sometimes I get a Musar Shmuz and I'm better. And then there's like the Tshuva of destiny. What did the Rav say? The Rav basically says, he says it's different. He also makes a compromise. Says there's free will and not free will. But not like Rav Dessler. There's determined territory. Right? Rav Dessler says there's D, determined territory, and F, free will territory. The Rav says there's no territory. He doesn't believe in the Kudat HaBechira. How does the Rav see it? There's two ways of living life. I'm sorry I can't read it inside, but you should definitely go home and read it inside. There's two ways of living life. You can live life as determinism, which means life as an object, which is what he calls fate, or goral, or you could live life in free will, meaning as a subject, right? Object means life did this to me. Subject means I make my life. As a subject, which is what he calls destiny, or in Hebrew, yi'ud. He says basically, it's everyone's choice in life. You can just live the way you were brought up. You can do what your brain is set up to do, and what your parents taught you, what your friends taught you, what your experience taught you. Everyone could just live the way the liberal judges think. I do everything a product of my environment, and you could do that totally 100%. Or, not different territory. Or you can choose to live on a different level of existence. There's something in our brains where we make a choice. Do we want to just be sheep and live on the level of determinism and goral? Or do we want to take charge of our own existence and make our own decisions and do something different than we were trained to do? Because we want to do, realize our destiny, we want to do something as a subject. We want to run our lives, not have all these forces run our lives. Everyone has a power in their soul, lehitgaber on determinism, and to use their free will. So for the Rav, it's not this territory determined territory free will. Some people just go with determinism, and some people choose to use free will. Ultimately, the greatest choice is not using your free will, it's choosing to use your free will in the first place. For the Rav, you have a choice whether to use free will, which actually makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Like, some people just act exactly the way they were brought up to act. And some people all of a sudden decide they want to do something different with their lives. And the Rebbe would say, that's not a product of some other force. That's you deciding to live a life of destiny and use your free will. That's what the Rebbe would say. So for the Rebbe, you know, the sort of mussar is very different. For the Rebbe, yes, we all have our deterministic forces, but we can just make a decision using our own willpower to say, I don't care how I was brought up. I don't care about anything. That's called what the Rebbe calls Yesh Kona Olamo B'Sha'achat. Unlike Rav Dessler said, it's gradual. The Rebbe says, and Rav Dessler also is right, from Chazal, you can be Kona Olamo, right? You can move from Rishus to Tzidkus, from Gehenna to Olam Haba in one moment. Right? B'Sha'achat. What does that mean? You move from a life of fate, and all of a sudden decide destiny. You know what? You can conquer all the territory at once. Because right now, everything is determined by determinism until you decide to use your free will and be your own person and define your own life. That's called moving from destiny to fate. That's what, from fate to destiny, sorry. That's what he... Oh, this actually works bad, that determinism goes with fate and free will goes with destiny. The letters are backwards, but it's not my fault. We'll call it determinism so no one gets confused, and we'll call it free will. And so both the Rebbe and Rav Dessler, just to summarize, because then we have to go to Mincha, both the Rebbe and Rav Dessler both admit that, like, especially this time of the year we're thinking about our lives, they both admit that, you know what, there really is an excuse out there alone. There really is an excuse out there. We're brought up certain ways, we're just trained to do certain things, and sometimes we don't have free will. But yet we do have free will. They just have different ways of explaining how to grab onto that free will. For Dessler, it's grab onto the no man's land in between, to the present struggles, and move the front further and further and further, and eventually, free will can change everything. For the Rebbe, all the territory is determined, half, there is no man's land, half belongs to Yetzer Tov, half belongs to Yetzer Hara, until you just decide, click in your mind, I'm going to be a subject, not an object, I'm going to run life, life's not going to run me, I'm going to determine my place in the universe isn't going to put me in the place it sees for me. And then you could use your free will, and kona lo b'sha'achat, you could change everything in one moment. So it's actually two very different ways of what the tshuva is all about. Like, what's the service made tshuva? What are we doing? From Dessler, we're gradually conquering territory, and we're like working on our struggles right now, and how do we work to conquer that, and then we'll move on to the next challenge. For the Rav, it's just deciding that all of life is different, and that we can change everything, and the power's in our hands, and yesh kona lo b'sha'achat, in one moment, we can change our entire lives. Okay, who's right? That I don't know. But hopefully you've gotten a little bit of an introduction to the more practical side, not of philosophically determining whether or not we have free will, but of practically figuring out how to balance the fact that we know we're affected with our environment, partially, but the fact that we believe we have free will, and we see 2 miles of death on the rough. I wish everyone a Gemar Chesima Tova. Next week is Dana's Zmanim for boys, so there will be no shear next week.
Zmanim for girls.
Okay, but